हरिः ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण
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 हरे 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 राम
राम
राम राम हरे हरे. Okay, so now trying to Bhaktisiddhartha on the second part, superiority of bhakti over sadhanas, other sadhanas, the supremacy of bhakti is the ultimate path. Right, so we finished the first three adhikaranas, so now this is the fourth adhikarana. Okay, Adhikarana The current Adhikarana is the fourth section of the Adhyaya that focuses on establishing bhakti as the highest process, Abhideya, to attain the absolute truth. In the first three Adhikaranas, the author asserts that among various types of rituals, worship of the Supreme Lord stands as the foremost and represents the ultimate purpose of all Vedic knowledge. The superiority of Bhakti Yoga over Karma and Jnana is demonstrated by illustrating how both Karma and Jnana ultimately lead to Bhakti and how Bhakti yields transcendental results not attainable through other processes. That's what's important because you can say they're all the same, but others can't yield the same results. That's the important aspect, is that what you get, bhakti will give results of karma. In other words, karma and jnana will bring you towards bhakti, you know, if you have that inclination. But, or they'll move you forward on the path, it'll stop. You won't go past jnana unless there is the understanding of bhakti. Otherwise, you'll stop there. But the only bhakti can give the transcendental results. Right, the others do not give. It's not that they add something to it, and then you know it's like the cherry on the top with the bhakti. No, it's they cannot give. They don't have the ability. Furthermore, there is a strong emphasis on the exclusive worship of the Supreme Lord, with a rejection of worshiping demigods. Right, so exclusive because when you're talking about relationship and the taste of that relationship, you're talking about exclusiveness. The more committed, the more, you know, we talk about relationships, the loyalty that is there, or the commitment that's there, or that kind of dedication that's there, you know, in relationship, that's what makes the relationship strong. So therefore, being exclusively about Krishna then is the process. Just one second. I'm thinking the This is okay, connected, transparency. Okay, we're good. Okay, sound like the ear thingies were not doing what they were supposed to be doing. Okay. So that is it's an emphasis on that. So that is our standard. That's how it goes. It's not a matter of discussion that, I mean, you can discuss. One always has to remember is that the definition of dogma is that which can't be discussed, right? It's an established position, but it's not discussable, right? So in the Vedic, because most of the time when you get to dogma, people don't have they can't define or they can't establish their dogma. That's why you can't discuss it. With us, it's an irrefutable fact about the position of the founder Acharya, about Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, you know, worship of Radha Krishna, the exclusive worship of the Lord, Braja Bhakti. But you can discuss them and explain why it's like that. You know, so there's an intolerance to people, how you say, speaking badly about it. But the point is it's discussable. So in the Vaishnav tradition, there's no dogma. People will throw it out because it's just one of those terms that if you throw it out, then as soon as that you know hits the arena, everybody stands back with respect and goes, yes, yes, the absolute truth has been spoken. So there's all these political terms they'll use. So they'll use dogma politically just to make people quiet. Just like in the modern politically correct, they'll use racism, they'll use, you know, whatever it is that they'll use. That just the word itself has so much power and potency that just by saying it, then it is the nigra hastana on which the other person has nothing to say. They completely defeated and destroyed. So because they have no argument, they can't explain it. But the point is here is that since Krishna is everything, that means everything that exists, you know, what we would call a fact, is Krishna and can be explained in the context of Krishna. There is no such thing as something that can't be explained by Vaishnava philosophy. You know, if it's real, the principle, it might be the detail of it is useless. You know, like that one person who was came and was with, you know, came to discuss or something with Srila Prabhupada and the devotees were there and explained about the position of the guru, that he's absolute, you know, that he knows everything. So then he says, oh, you know, it's one of those, you know, I'm so smart. I'm, you know, check out my cleverness. If you're so smart, how many windows in the Empire State Building? Right? Because they take that kind of fact, not the existence of what it's there, why there's any. And then Prabhupada just kind of leaned forward and says, how many windows in a mirage? You know, so that's the whole point, is that the principle is there and then the detail connected with principle. In other words, it's a deductive approach that one takes the inductive and then throws that forward as authority and says, ha, you're defeated. No. That's not how it goes. It's not a matter of countering and this and that. It's just a matter of exposing the absolute truth. So when we're talking about anvikshiki here, it's in relationship to the philosophy. So it's not just like nyaya where, okay, there's this opinion or this understanding and there's that understanding. Let's discuss until we kind of get to the point where there's some clarity for both sides. You know, because there's an interest to how to move forward. You do have that element, but there, they're only trying to move forward their understanding. That's why it's aparavidya. It's not transcendental knowledge, because it can be used in connection with transcendental knowledge, but it isn't inherently transcendental knowledge. Because it's simply, okay, as Krishna mentions, there's one path. And so how to move forward on that path. So I have this idea, that person has that idea, we discuss, this one quotes from Shastra, I quote from Shastra. I had an understanding like this, they point out something that, you know, you could take it a bit further because of another quote, and then they go, okay, that's a good point, I appreciate that, and then, but what about this? And then you point out things, and they go, oh yes, that's very good. So you're coming to a kind of more a common ground and moving forward in your understanding. That's not anvikshiki. You know, it may be thought of like that, but it's not debate. We don't have debate as such, because it's a matter of this is the absolute truth. It's a matter of trying to explain it to the other person that they appreciate it. It'd be just like, let's say we have the math teacher, right? And he's sitting there and he has a class, and let's say we're dealing with calculus or something, and he has a whole room full of, you know, super intelligent, already ready to, you know, how you say, rule and direct the whole world because they're 16 years old and they know everything, you know, and that's because, you know, isn't it? There's a, you know, that tradition of the divine right of teenagers, you know, like that. They know everything and all that. And suddenly, somehow or another, when they turn, you know, 18 or 20 or something like that, then they figure it out. Maybe they don't know as much as they knew, but whatever it is, at that time, the glory of it, they know everything and they're clever and they think they're smart and everything like that. So then the math teacher makes some very, you know, particular point, some unique point that's new and all that. And then one of the students challenges it and, oh, what about this? And he's very clever. So he brings this and he brings that and all this and that. So is it a matter of debate on whether this mathematical you know, postulate is correct or not? No, it has nothing to do with this guy, right? It's a matter of this is what it is. You know, it's like 2 + 2 = 4. It's not a matter of, well, that's your opinion and your view, you know, but for Calvin, it's 22, you know, because then what's the authority? Hobbes told him. And so like that, you know, so, you know, this is how, you know, no, it's a matter of this is what it is. Right? We're not talking about all these illusory like Buddhism and things like this, where a nirvesation shunyavad, where, well, that's your opinion because it's all illusion, so therefore this and that. No, we're not talking, we're talking absolute truth. Now it's just a matter of discussion, finding which way that you can explain it that the other person appreciates, right? Because as we said, if you make the statement and they understand it, then that part of the conversation just continue means it's done. You move on to the next step. If it's not, then you need to give a reason. You know? So then, you know, if I say, okay, you know, and we're going at 8 o'clock, and the other person, what? Why are we going? Why are we going? You know, it's like, because at 8 o'clock, then there's this happening. And then the other person, you know, add that, oh, okay, yeah, okay, we're going at 8. But if they don't understand, then I have to go into further explanation where I have to bring it to why they have to do that, why we have to leave, why it's important to them. So in other words, if they haven't analyzed this point on their own before, and it's come to a point of at least understanding, if not realization, then I have to bring it to them that they can appreciate that and understand it. That's the third stage of the logic, is that you make it that it's accessible to them. It means something to them. In other words, it becomes concrete to them. I use an example that to them is concrete because the world is abstract. So I'm making my point, and they're hearing the philosophical point that's being made, the thesis, as abstract. And so it's up for discussion. No, it's not. It's about understanding it. So then you give an example that for them, okay, they can relate to that. And then you show how, okay, this is how it logically works. And since it's something that's outside this discussion, but enough that it's related that it could serve to be an example of, then, but with that detached view, then, or they have a positive attached view, either way, then you can show them that this is correct. And then they go, yes, that's good. Then you say, like that, the philosophical point I made is like that. You know? And so then you go, oh, okay, so it connects like that. And then you can say, so therefore it's like this. We're leaving at 8. Or, you know, whatever it is you're doing. So that's the process. So it's a matter of if both sides don't know the absolute truth they're searching, then, you know, yes, according to what they've done, it's based on Praman, on Shastra, it'll be progressive. But if it's based simply on speculative knowledge, then all they'll do is progress in speculative knowledge in the inductive process. You know, so they'll go deeper and deeper. So in deductive comes down, inductive starts with you. But the problem is the more you make it about you, the more you go away from the absolute truth. Like that. Does that make sense? Either. So that's the thing that we're dealing about, is that here the strong emphasis, exclusive worship, because that's what a relationship is. It's exclusive. Prema means it's exclusive. Like that, then everything else is seen in context of that exclusiveness. Just like if you have an affection for one person, then as that deepens, that then those connected with that person also, or those things connected become. You know, it's just like the mother has attachment to the child. So therefore, even seeing the paraphernalia of the child, or the child that say is out of school, the mother walks into the child's room, you know, to do just the standard routine, you know, like clean up or get the laundry or whatever it is that they're doing. And so, but when she goes in there, because it's connected with the child, it reminds of the child. And then when they would sit and talk, or at night, you might tell, you know, bedtime stories, or, you know, whatever it is like that. Or one time the child was sick. And so then the time spent and the interaction, it'll remind all these things because of the paraphernalia. So the paraphernalia becomes important. You know, like that. So that's what happens, because there's exclusive love for Krishna. Therefore, and Krishna has relations with all these devotees in affection. Therefore, they become part of that affection. If you want to please Krishna, you please through including all those devotees. Right? So it's the only actual universal, because you say, oh, no, but we're all connected. We're all part of the world. Okay, but then who rules the world? Right? Depending on who you ask, then they'll say girls rule the world. And if you're talking about, you know, Shiva's wife, then they are correct, you know. And then, you know, you have all of her associates and all that. So whatever. So then the point is that, you know, okay, but then who's ruling? And then it's based on what they say. So if you say girls rule the world, then it's about their perspective, their needs, their, that's how it works. So everybody is connected all together in the world as if women's are comfortable with it. And if it's, they're not comfortable with it, you're not part of the world. So all I've said is that these political statements are sentimental statements of seemingly poetic statements. Oh, yes, we're all part of the world, the greater family of the world, you know, what do you call it? World without borders, you know, and all these kind of things like that. And it sounds great, but then when you define what world means, define what inclusive means, it simply means those that agree with what I say. And that's my position. I'm fighting for that and that. But the day I decide that that's not my philosophy, my philosophy is, you know, save the blue whale, I couldn't care less about all the other guys. I only care about the blue whale because it's all subjective. It's about me. So the only thing that's objective and universal is exclusive attachment to Krishna and that which is in pursuance of that. In other words, the process of sadhana bhakti in pursuance of pure devotion. That's the only objective thing. Everything else, no matter what it is, it's all subjective. It may be more pious that it's more in line with God's laws, or less pious that it's simply speculative, or it's even opposed to God's laws. But it's never objective. No matter what they say, bring the biggest academics and this and that, they demand it. Why? Because they're in the chair and they're saying it. If they're not saying it, they won't say it's correct. Just like before, you had Einstein. What he said, that's the thing. You know, and that's the standard. And now then there was a time when they say, no, Einstein, you know, doesn't know what he's talking about. And now it's kind of like, yeah, there's parts of it that are good and this and that. You know, we'll work him in. You know, he's it's okay if he comes and hangs out with us because we're the cool dudes. And, you know, he's also, you know, was a cool dude in his day. And so, you know, yeah, we can all be buddy-buddy. But it's on our terms. Not on his. So it's always about themselves, and they see the world from there. And so those persons that have the common thing, that's the world. That's why the person is coming out of their house and thinking, yeah, no, this is what, you know, the thing is. Then they bump into one of their friends or associates and they mention, yeah, you know, this. They go, yeah, no, that sounds good. And so because they agree with me and I'm talking the absolute and they agree with it, then when I go to the meeting, right after that, and then when it comes time to speak, then I raise my hand and I go, you know, everybody says this. It means me and this guy who agreed with me. It does not mean everybody. It never means. Because the only everybody is those who are in line with what Krishna says. That's it. The Vaishnava, the pure Vaishnavas, that's everybody. And everything else, that's just the modes of nature. So we have to see is that this point about bhakti is superior to all other sadhas, it's not an opinion. It's not, you know, yeah, that's one of the things. We're not talking jato mat tato pat like, you know, our Bengali pujari. We're talking here is this is the absolute truth. It's Krishna. That's what it is. Krishna is existence. So that's just the fact. It's not up for debate. It's up for this. You can discuss it. You can become educated in it, but it's not a matter of, okay, well, you've established that and now we have better argumentary skills and so like that. No, that's why then it mentions if you're looking for the absolute truth, that discussion, that's called vada. If you just want to establish your position, then that's called jalpa. Right? Because it's just a matter of talking. You're just going to talk until the other guy can't talk anymore. And then your opinion becomes established, right? Just by, you know, that's the automatic thing, right? But then nowadays, you see, it's just a matter, they don't have an opinion. They don't know, but they won't tolerate anybody else's opinion. So that's called vitanda. that they just destroy anybody else's opinion. Whatever it is, they'll argue against it. And you'll see, even you say something that's supporting what they say because you said it, they'll fight it and argue against it. When you point it out that it's this, then they'll twist that, and that there's no, it's just envy. It's just madness. You know, the second one's pride. The first one is humility, that you actually want to know. The second one is pride because it's mine, therefore it's great. Like that. You know, so we have to be careful of that. So yes, it's just like guru is great. He's my guru. He's great. He's great because he's guru, but he's great on his own, whether you're his disciple or not, or his student or not. So you have to point out what's the greatness of, you know, that position. That's why you have the identity of guru is great. And then the individual has their unique characteristics, how they manifest that greatness. Does that make sense? So it has, that's the point here. So Krishna then is inherently, he is great. He is the great. He is the greatest. Okay. Or good on all that or anything or? Yeah. Okay. Next, devotional service to Vasudeva. Vasudeva is elucidated as the conclusive essence of all scriptures. The author systematically presents how each canto of Srimad Bhagavatam underscores the supremacy and transcendental nature of bhakti. This assertion aligns with the overarching theme across all scriptures that bhakti stands as the highest and most profound spiritual process. Right, so this devotional service to Vasudeva. So it's not to Sankarshan Pajunyani Adirudha, it's to Vasudeva. Means, and seeing that Vasudeva means that there is also expanding in Sankarshan Pajunyani Adirudha. So that devotion to Vasudeva then has that aspect exclusive, and then it includes the others because they're expanding from him. Right? Does that make sense? So it's going to have that aspect that Vasudeva then is the point, because that's the application of all the knowledge, all the ability, and all what is desired, what is wanted or needed, all that together. It means you have a situation, you have what you're going to do in that situation because you want something, right? I have a situation, I could get this, and so I put in the endeavor. So if you put those three together, that's Vasudeva. Each one on its own has an aspect, and they're connected. So when you're talking about the position, the circumstance, that's going to include all the different people, things like that. But you have to understand what they can do, the qualifications for that, and what they can give. So to discuss Sambandha, you have to also have an understanding how it relates to Abhidhamma and Prayojana. But the main discussion is on the field, right? In discussing Prajumna, then it's okay, what are the qualifications? What are the abilities? You know, what is the knowledge that you have? What has to be applied? And you can see this. And so all that then together, but it has to be based on what's the Sambandha Gyan, and I as an individual, what I can do, where it can go in Aniruddha. So in other words, Sankarshan may be the primary discussion, but it has to include Prajumna and Aniruddha. Otherwise, you don't actually understand the position. Prajumna then is the central discussion, is there, but without the context of Sankarshan and Aniruddha, it's not complete. And Aniruddha may be the primary, you know, discussion that you're having, but without the understanding of Sankarshan and Prajumna, it doesn't mean anything either. You say, oh, that's the goal. Goal of what? Goal of this action. That why is the action? Who's doing the act? What's that? That's the Sankarshan. It'll always go back. You'll always have to discuss three, though you may be emphasizing one feature. But Vasudeva means all three of them functioning together at one time for the pleasure of the Lord. Right? Because ultimately, the Sankarshan Prajumna aspect, these elements that are there, the aspects of that Chaturvyuha, they're there to support Krishna's pleasure. Right? Does that make sense? So that always has to be seen, is that if it's not seen in that context, it doesn't actually get to the highest level. It doesn't actually. So Vasudeva is bringing out that it's beyond just that he's God. He's the person, right? Up to that, he's God. You know, so for us, is yes, we know Krishna's God. You know, the Brajvasis know he's God, but that's not the reason that they're serving him. They're serving him because they like him as a person. That's the whole point. So it has to be seen as that this worship of Vasudev means that you're worshiping the Lord as the Supreme Personality of Godhead rather than as God or as Brahman. Right? These features are there because, like we said, they all go together. But the point is in this, actually, then, is Bhagavan is the supreme aspect. And then of that is Bhagavan. Then we see where he goes beyond. He is the person, but he has the identity of that he is the, you know, creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So that's the Purusha avatar. So it's beyond that. Then in Vaikuntha, his identity is that I am God. But he is an individual, it's a person, right? So you're going to have both identity and individuality. Then you're going to have, when you get to Goloka, that he's Krishna. So he's, you know, in Ramlila, then he's the son of Dasarath, you know, and in Dwarka Lila, then he's going to be the son of Vasudev. But in Braj, then he's the son of Nanda Maharaj. So that's going to be the point that's there. So Vasudev here means that he's God as an individual. He has the identity as the supreme, but he has his individual view. But here also then we're taking it to that point where it's about his individual view, his satisfaction. And then as Gaudiyas, then as the aspect of Karshana, so we're worshiping Krishna. But then we're Gaudiyas, so then we're worshiping Krishna in Braja from the perspective of Radharani. Right? So that identity, that he is the son of Nanda Maharaj, but the boyfriend of Radharani, that then becomes the actual identity. So you have to take this further. So it's not just that we're just saying Vasudeva like that. It has that obvious aspect that's about, you means worship of Vishnu, supreme over any other worship. But within that, then it has that it goes back, because Vasudev means son of Vasudev. So you've already taken it that he's son of, so we're taking it more. The Bhagavatam's saying that. You could say, oh, but that's Vishnu. It says, no, it's the aspect, what's bringing out is that he's identifying as someone's son. Because in Vaikuntha, he never identifies as someone's son. You know, so that's the aspect that's there. So then you're going to get, you know, so even though it's like that, yeah, okay. In order to substantiate this principle further, a comparative analysis is done of the various yoga processes in the current Adhikarana. Through this comparison, bhakti is unanimously established as the superior process. First, the author establishes bhakti as the only independent process, whereas karma and jnana are dependent on bhakti for the results. And he, quote, devotional service to his lotus feet is the root cause of all the perfections a person can find in heaven, in liberation, in the subterranean regions, and on earth, right? So whatever it is, it is the root of all those others. Because you have to remember, they're a reflection of what's in the spiritual world. So it's roots there, not here. Right? They have a mirror. The root of the mirror is in the person reflected. And the paraphernalia around that person in the room. You can't say it's separate and that. It's like sometimes they'll try to deify. You know, yes, Krishna's, yeah, you know, created the world and all that, but now he's left it for us to manage. You know, that's the deists, that's the mentality of those who established the American democracy. Right? It means God is God and God we trust. It's about him, but he's given this place for us to deal with, and we've got to make it happen because he's not going to. You know, he may inspire us, he may make things do for us, but it's on our will and on our determination. Right? Right? Is that sounding familiar? Right? Or they deify Prabhupada. You know, yes, he's the this, he's that, and every all wonderful things like that. But you know, that was at that time, and that now it's a different time. So we have to, you know, time, place, circumstance, make adjustments, and all that. Or even more extreme, he's from the spiritual world, so he doesn't really know the material world, you know, like that. We're from here, so it's our place. So, you know, we're from the hood, so we can say what's going on here and all that. It's kind of like, that's like saying the person that's reflected in the mirror can't understand the reflection, what's in the mirror. Only the reflection in the mirror can actually understand what's going on in the mirror. So that's an illusion. So the whole point is since it's reflected, its basis, its root is there. You know, there you have parents and children and the interaction. That what goes on here. So the closer it is to the, in other words, the closer it is to the mechanical form of what goes on in the spiritual world between Mother Yashoda and Krishna and the, you know, the elder gopis and gopas and Krishna. That's going to be what's pious in the material world. That's what's recommended, how parents deal with children, how children deal with parents. But as far as the focus on rasa, then it's about Krishna. That takes it into the transcendental. That's why they can't give a transcendental result, karma jnana, because they can only, they're only reflecting the mechanics that are there. But the perversion is we've taken that it's centered around Krishna to it's centered around ourselves. That's why it always comes back to this inductive. Inductive comes from the jiva of being illusion. Deductive means when it's about Krishna. So those on the platform of prema, they only think it's about Krishna, then everything else. And in the material world, the jiva thinks it's about me and then everything else. So the inductive mentality is not a just one of two mentalities. It is the conditioned mentality. It's not, I mean, someone may start there because they're in a condition, but they have to understand is that unless it's based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it has no basis. Like that. So therefore, whatever is of substance, and the thing itself is made of material, which is Krishna's energy controlled by his laws, what function it's been given in the beginning of creation, you know, in the primary creation, that's the way it works. It can't work any other way. You know, it's not by my speculation. Oh, times have changed. It's eternal. You know, it's not subjective to the illusions of the jiva, because otherwise, what is there's Krishna in his creation. He breathes out. He does it. He enters everything as super soul and controls all his energies. So, what is it that you're controlling? What are you doing? Right? Something is there. You want to pick something up. Okay, I pick this up. But I have to use my fingers or something that can grab. I can't use my ear. I can't use my nose. Right? I have to use my hand. Who said that? Not me. Not any government of the world. It's Krishna says that's the way it works. Hands do that. And I can pick it up on my fingers because it's light enough. I can't pick up a 1-ton rock like that. Okay, if you're Ubermensch, you know, like that from Smallsville, then maybe you can do it. But, you know, he can't pick up, you know, he has a limit on how much he can pick up. So all that is how Krishna's arranged it. So this whole idea is that, oh, but there's this world and it's going on its own. No, it's all going on under the direction of Krishna, you know, being managed by Maya. There is no separate reality. It's a reflection. So its reality is based on the actual original. And it functions according to the original mechanics. How Mother Yashoda cooks in the spiritual world is how they cook here. The preparations are mentioned. You know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the associates were cooking them. It's mentioned, you know, that these are what it is. You can go to the Bengali villages and those people know they still know how to cook, you know, preparations like that. The mechanics are the same. You can learn the recipe. You can cook it yourself. Doesn't have necessarily the devotion that Mother Yashoda has or Radharani has. So, you know, there's good, but the mechanics of it are the same. It's not that Shukta in the spiritual world you know, go and take a whole bunch of, you know, old bicycle wheels, cut them up into pieces, and then throw them up in the air at the same time, turning on the fan on full. And then when the, what do you call it? When the tire shreds hit the fan, then we go, shukta, and everybody claps and yes, and like that. No. There's a recipe. It has certain ingredients. You put other ingredients, it's not shukta. You know? And so you have to follow what's there. So it's a reflection. So they cook, they eat. Here they cook, they eat. But real cooking is there. Here it's the reflection of that cooking. You know? So it has to be seen as that the root is that devotional. It's the root because that's why it's there. Because there's devotion, there's prema. The devotees have prema for Krishna, love for Krishna. That's why then that's their position, right? Then the vibhavas, then what is inspiring, you know, what is it, what inspires and nourishes that, and then the anubhava is then what they want to do to express it. Mother Yashoda sees Krishna and she wants to feed him, so therefore she cooks. So that means devotion is the all action and all situations are all an expansion of the desire of Krishna and the devotees to express their love for each other. That's it. There isn't any other cause. And then that's reflected here without that devotion. So you can't say as, okay, that's one way. That's, you know, it's kind of, but we're talking, you know, science here. We're talking reality here. No, they're talking illusion if they don't understand this. They're talking illusion. To think that there's something else other than devotion, that's there. And anything in the material, that's why you see if someone's, you know, died for his country and, you know, is glorious, or he, you know, protected his family no matter what, or, you know, something like that has some glory to it. You know, the friends supported the friends because there's some glory, because that's what they do in the spiritual world based on their love for Krishna. That's reflected here. Instead of Krishna and the Cowherd Boys, it's, you know, a bunch of punks, you know, running around in the back of a convertible car, you know, drinking beer and falling out and throwing cans at people that as they drive past, you know. So it's perverted. It's distorted because it's about them, you know, and whoever is the main guy there. Or, you know, in high school, you have the queen bee, the queen, the girl who she's the center of all the cool girls and all that. And then it's about that. And then they connect with it. So yes, it's perverted. And then it's distorted because then it takes on all these not necessarily pious things. If it's less distorted, it looks more like what is going on in the spiritual world, though it's perverted because it's about themselves, but not so distorted. And then as you move away from the Vedic, it just gets more and more distorted. You know, it's just like the, you know, the animal, you know, the father of the baby animals really loves his babies, you know, like, what was his name? Not Alfred E. Newman. Who was it? Wow, can't even remember. But that someone asked W.C. Fields, he says, you know, so you like children? Yes, I love children, fried in butter. You know, in other words, he meant, I don't like children. But here is that some animals, they love their children. They love to eat them. So that's a perverted expression of love. They don't protect their children. The mother, then she gets upset and then won't let this father come around again, because every time he comes around, one more of their kids disappear. You know? So therefore, then, you know, that's distorted. So when people are talking about this, that is distortion. But what's the original? What is supposed to look? So if a distortion is there, why would you use another distortion as your alternative? Oh, the left distortion is wrong. We'll use the right distortion. No, you want to use Krishna conscious. It's not distorted. It's original. It's real. So it always comes back to that. The inadequacies of other yoga processes, including karma, jnana, and yoga, are then highlighted to underscore their inefficiency in reaching the ultimate goal of life, right? Because action is there in the spiritual world. That reflected here without devotion is called karma. And those living entities in the spiritual world, they're all situated on the platform of transcendence. They're all on the spiritual platform. They have no connection with the material world. That reflected here without devotion to Krishna is called jnana or liberation. So that's what's reflected. Yoga is that, you know, trying to make that connection, but it's actually without that devotion for Krishna. And so then, you know, it has that symbolism that maybe there's a personal aspect, but ultimately it's localized. So it's not about Bhagavan. It's about Paramatma. So either Paramatma is controlling the material energy and all that. That's the Brahman. They go back to Brahman. Or if Paramatma is a person and he's doing that because of his own, interest, you know, in how to save the living entity. So you move forward to bhakti. But staying on the platform of just Paramatma, it's not viable. You'll move one way or the other. You'll either take, like you see in the modern, oh yes, God's a person. He's this. He controls everything. He's the judge. He's the creator. He's the maintainer. He's the destroyer. He's everything like that. And they're saying he's a person, but they're only seeing the localized. So then what does he look? Oh, he's a person. So in other words, they're worshiping the Abrahamic, are worshiping Paramatma and as bona fide. But when you go further on it, they go back to the impersonal. You know, like that. There might be a few who go forward, but generally they're seen as weird. Like that, like in the Christian, you'd have ones that talk about love for God and things like that. You can talk about that, but they were talking about a person interacting. And then generally those persons were, you know, either told to get it together or they were burned at the stake or they were, you know, anathema. They were kicked out of their tradition. Like that. So it's not actually that part. You can talk about it. God is a person in that, but it's from the Paramatma level. And you want to develop like this, that's fine. But that it's about that exclusive love for the Lord, that has not developed in their understanding. Not that it can't, not that they're not open to it. It's just that they haven't taken it that far. Right? They've just gone on that Paramatma level. And that's what then creates them technically as Vaishnavas, but it's mixed. It's Vaishnavas mixed with the impersonal. So it's more of an appreciation of God. It's more of Shantaras. But they don't have enough knowledge to bring it to Bhagavan, you know, in factual. So that's the thing, is that you take what's in the spiritual world, remove the devotion, then you get this karma, jnana, and yoga here. You know, and these are uplifting processes. We're not even talking about being political or, or like that, or atheistic, or just being a sense gratifier. We're not even talking, those aren't, you know, paths that we would necessarily recommend. Okay. The uncertainty, we're good. Anytime anyone has a question, just let us know. The uncertainty of obtaining results from karma, even after enduring significant challenges during the performance of sacrifices, is evident from the Naimisharanya sage's excerpt. In contrast, bhakti is easily practiced even during sadhana and yields the highest results. So the sages at Naimisharanya are doing this yajna, very difficult and all that. You know, they had a time where they start the yajna and all that, and because something's wrong and something in the level of consciousness somewhere, then it won't start and it just goes out, you know, so sooty and all that. They put so much ghee that it makes all this black soot and everyone just becomes covered in black soot. And then they're all sitting there looking at each other, right? So I guess the original blackface. But at the same time, they were Indians, so it's not actually appropriation of culture. It's just a little blacker than they were expecting to be, right? And so it's difficult. Well, bhakti is nice all the way through. It's always good, right? And it's easy to practice, and it gives the highest results. These other ones are difficult to perform, and they only move you forward to a certain level. Well, bhakti is easy to perform and gives the highest results. Simultaneously, it's going on. So that's superior, you know? You can go out. Okay, we have two options here. One is you can go out and work very hard and that, you know, 36 hours a day and, you know, no sleep, nothing to eat and all that. And then finally, that'll bring you to the point where after so many days and years and whatever it is of that, that will bring you to a guy who can kind of like tell you what's going on that you're looking for in your business. Then you get to meet this guy, and then he's telling to you this and that, and how you can, you know, how you say, you know, like, look, buy this stock and that, and all the things, and you have to run around and do all this research. And then ultimately, that will bring you to the platform where you meet somebody who can tell you actually how to like start setting up the business. Then meeting that guy who started like that, and then also now working 48-hour day, you know, 48-hour day and 276-hour week, you know, like that. Then, you know, that'll bring to the point where then, you know, then he might teach you about, you know, the accounting. And like this, we just go on and on and on and on. And then finally you get to the point where, you know, you have your shop there and all your people and all that, and it's all running and all that. It's just taking you, you know, 273 Maha Yugas, you know, to get there. And, you know, how you say 3 lifetimes of Brahma and, you know, all these different things. Or you could do one path where it's just, okay, do this. You have a business running and you get profit. You know, all on, you know, you're sleeping your 8 hours a day and putting in a 40-hour week. And then technically you're only putting in a 20-hour week, but you don't want to make the people that work for you feel bad. And even 20 hours is probably even less. Which do you choose? Right? It's a no-brainer. Everybody will go for the easiest. So why won't they acknowledge bhakti as the easiest? No, it's got to be hard. It's got to be difficult. Then I feel I'm doing something. You know, I'll put a pin on the end of the button on the clicker. So when I press, then, you know, it hurts my finger and there's blood. And then I feel, yeah, that's real chanting. You know, that's man's chanting, you know, yeah. You know, so no, it's just, why do you need all that? You just surrender to Krishna, chant Hare Krishna and Hare Bol. Follow what's recommended by the acharyas. They've made it nice. They've made it easy. We say it's difficult because we don't want to do it. Otherwise, all the alternatives are way more difficult because as soon as you get into the reflection, it's more difficult. The results attained from the process of karma are meager and transient, right? You're not going to get much and they disappear. Failing to garner the favor of the Lord, even if the practitioner achieves elevated material status, right? So you still never get the you know, the Lord appreciating what you're doing because you're just playing with his material energy and much of the time not even following the rules. And so you're not getting a good result, you know, just like that. Let us say you come in and you find a bunch of kids. Okay, they're just playing something stupid and running around. Okay, it's cute. But then if you come in and the kids have organized and playing a nice game and they're quite good at it, the skill is very good, it catches your attention. You know, call others to come over, the neighbors come over and stand and watch the boys playing and like, wow, this is cool. You know? So that's the thing is that if they don't follow, they don't find, how is that going to impress God? And even if you follow, but the point is, since it's not about the connection with Krishna, it's Krishna's energy. He's having to support and do all the things to make it all work. You swing the bat and hit the ball, that you have the ability to swing, that you have the vision that you can see, that, you know, the ball is coming, that the guy could throw the ball, and that you have to hit the ball. And then, you know, throwing in Newton's third law there, you know, just to, you know, round it out, you know. And so then, and the ball goes flying. That's all Krishna's doing, all that. But at the same time, you're not including him, how it's going to be of interest to him. In contrast, performance of sincere devotional service, even from an individual socially deemed inferior, such as a dog eater, is capable of pleasing the Lord. Right? So the point of the dog eater is that they generally go against the proper nature. Right? So, in other words, a nishada is considered low, but they are a shudra by nature, but they kind of have a Brahminical spirit. So they're interested in Shudra work, but with that kind of little touch of some spiritual, though it may not come to much. So they tend to be involved in their sinful activities. The Chandala is the opposite. They are a Brahminical nature with a Shudra spirit. So therefore, they try to take anything Brahminical and apply it into the Shudra field, you know, for Shudra results. So that's worse. So they're against actually doing things right. So you see someone who, you know, has the sentiment that, yes, we'd like to do it all properly and devotionally in this, but they get so distracted by the senses and all that, that they can't do and all that. That's the one. Okay, they're innocent. But someone who, we're Brahma, we're this and that, you know, we're all that. But whatever they do is all grossly material, that's worse. So that's why the Chandala is always chosen as the lowest of the low. Nishad is low, but Chandala is lowest of the low. Right? So someone like that, who now takes up serving Krishna, then they come to a glorious position. So the point is it doesn't matter the background. As long as they're serving Krishna, then that's the glory. Because that's the original. That's what they do in the spiritual world. Now what happens is the devotional thing's in line, but the reflected form is not necessarily as good as possible. That's why Krishna says the apichet sudaracharo, is that he's rightly situated. So the emphasis there in that verse is not about, oh, he's doing something wrong, but he's okay. It's about he's rightly situated because he's surrendered to Krishna. So even though the devotee's taken up, but he doesn't know the standards of cleanliness, he still does all kinds of stupid things. He's still, you know, whatever it is, you know, he's saying, you know, sticking his fingers in his mouth and not washing, but not even aware that he's doing that, but that he's absorbed in Krishna and trying to do Krishna. He's rightly situated. And these other things he'll become aware with time. He'll become purified with time. So it's actually much broader than it's taken. It's generally just taken to things that are considered socially unacceptable. Then it's to either say it's okay or not. But the point is no, it's about Krishna consciousness is the glory. And that someone who's Krishna conscious is greater than even the greatest, most pious materials. Like that. And these problems, others, they'll go away with time. That they behave like a Malecha and Yavana because of their up and bringing, it'll go away with time. Just keep chanting, keep associating with the pure Vaishnavas, and it will go away. So that's the glory. It's not correct. It doesn't say that the abominable activities are correct. It just means that that's not the powerful player here. The powerful player is the surrender to Krishna. That's more powerful than abominable activities. Take down devotional service and non-devotional service. Of the two, devotional service is more powerful. It will win. So if it's continued, then one will be elevated. Like that, you know. So that's the whole point, is that the dog eater is capable of pleasing the Lord, while the person who's the best, the most pious, and he is, you know, situation materially is the most ideal, he can't please the Lord. Like that. The practice of Astanga Yoga is also deemed ineffective in attaining the Supreme Lord, because practitioners cannot achieve complete satisfaction of the heart, struggling to overcome material desires like lust and greed through the process. So they're not taking shelter of Krishna and having the experiences of the devotional, samskaras that are there from doing that. That is then slowly, that's better than than lust and greed. So they're just going on, they're using the body and focusing and mechanically going through. And if they're more, the more pious they are, the farther they can get through it. But it doesn't give any satisfaction at the heart, because they can't go beyond lust and greed, because lust, as long as lust and greed are there, you'll never be satisfied. You can't satisfy lust and greed. That's like saying, oh, we have a fire, we'll keep throwing wood into it, and that will, one day it'll get satisfied. No, you can't. Despite the practitioner's diligent endeavors in jnana yoga to attain perfect knowledge, the ultimate outcome is merging into the impersonal oneness of the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord. The same state is achieved by the enemies of the Lord simply due to their demise at his hands. In contrast, devotees reach the highest stage of knowledge and renunciation, gaining access to the Vaikuntha Lokas, the spiritual planets. Consequently, the pursuance of jnana is deemed unworthy for attaining the Supreme Lord. Because you go to that spiritual position, but then the point is because it's not transcendental, you'll come back. They're called transcendentalists because of the spiritual, they go beyond the material world. But because they don't get to the spiritual world, they will be back. Right? So that's the problem. Thus, karmakanda and jnanakanda are not useful for attaining the Supreme Lord. However, even upasanakanda will not yield the highest result if the worship is directed towards the demigods or any deity other than Lord Vishnu. The scriptures condemn the worship of devatas independent of the Supreme Lord. You see them in context of then the Lord with his associates. That's why you always see when you see the traditional paintings of Lord Vishnu laying there on Ananta Sesh, and all the main demigods and all the main devotees, everybody's there because they're all devotees. You've seen in context of. But to see them separately, that they can give this separate from Krishna, no, they have to ask Krishna anyway. Right? They do it because it's better they're following Krishna's laws without Krishna than not having no Krishna and no Krishna's laws. So that's why the demigods will interact. But they're devotees, they know it's wrong. But at least it's a step forward that they're following God's laws from the scripture on worship and that in upasana, but they're not bringing it to actual purpose of upasana, which is worship of Vishnu. The devatas can be worshipped as the devotees of the Lord or as his avarnas and viputis. Right? You see like the sun and the moon are seen as the eyes of the Lord. Indra is seen as, as the king. Hence, it is recommended to exclusively devote oneself to the worship of the Supreme Lord, who possesses a benevolent nature and displays immense gratitude by bestowing all desired blessings abundantly upon even those who offer him the slightest worship. Okay, so that ends the Adhikarana Prakashika. Okay, so we'll stop here for today. It also ends our time. Oh, no, we have two more minutes. Any questions? No? Yes? Okay, so here's that the exclusive devote, because Krishna is benevolent, because it means the essential nature. He is prema, he is love. So he has that affection for the living entities. And as the supreme person of all good qualities, then he has immense gratitude for even the smallest thing done. Like you see, the greater the person, the greater their gratitude. Someone does something very small for them, they take it as something very big. And the smaller the person is, and develop personally, then the greater thing you do for them, the less they think it's important. So Krishna is all that. So he gives all desired blessings abundantly upon even those who offer the slightest worship. So if you're worshiping for these material benefits, he'll reciprocate. But if you're worshiping for pure devotion, he'll bring you how to come to that. And that's the greatest. So therefore, the benefits of karma, jnana, and yoga, even if you approach the Lord, you can get those. But if you want pure bhakti, then Krishna is going to reciprocate because that's the best. Yes? No? Very good. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.